You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And Senator Bernie Sanders will be here on Monday for our, you know, every Friday we have brunch with Bernie. He takes your calls for an hour. And he's going to revisit this on Monday, and then we'll also have him on next Friday of next week. But I wanted to start the program with Robert Greenwald. Robert Greenwald, filmmaker, activist, the founder of Brave New Films, the website bravenewfilms.org. And Robert, I believe we have you. Can you hear me? Not yet. Okay, we're not hearing Robert, and Robert's not hearing us. Okay, well, in that case, until we figure out the technical end of this, our video guy who normally handles our Skype, his car croaked today, so Paul is running around trying to make it work. But until we get with that, we'll just do anything goes. Actually, I want to share with you, you know, what the news of what's happening right now, and then as soon as we get Robert on, we'll bring him onto the program. The president just gave a speech in the Rose Garden, in which, in his speech in the Rose Garden, he said that he's going to change the rules, basically, for enforcement of his immigration. You know, he's telling Janet Napolitano to change the way that immigration is being handled in the United States. And the details of the policy says if you're under 30 years old, brought to the country before you were 16, you've been here for 5 continuous years with no criminal background, you have graduated high school or served in the military, then you will not be deported. This is about 800,000 people that this would apply to. It's a little fewer than a million people. But it's basically the DREAM Act. And as the president was giving this talk, as the president was, you know, saying, you know, talking about this, one of Tucker Carlson's reporters for his right-wing website started heckling the president. It's truly bizarre, you know, when an obscure, pretty much unknown guy with a temporary press pass for a right-wing website, you know, back in the beginning of the Obama administration, the beginning of this year, the Obama administration said, yeah, we're not going to so much, we're not going to take calls from or, you know, questions and things from Fox News, because Fox News isn't a legitimate news organization. They're not a real news organization. They're an advocacy organization. Well, Fox News isn't alone on that. And frankly, you know, they backed down. The White House backed down on it. And they said, oh, OK, we'll treat Fox News. We'll pretend Fox News is actually a real news agency. They're not. You know, Roger Ailes proposed this to Richard Nixon. It was GOP TV. And now there's all these clones. So anyhow, Robert Greenwald is on the line with us now. Thank goodness. Robert, yeah. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Once again, to introduce you, you are the filmmaker, activist, founder of Brave New Films, bravenewfilms.org, and a whole bunch of spin-off organizations, Koch Brothers Exposed, Rethink Afghanistan, Sick for Profit, Immigrants for Sale, working with Katami, all these other great things. Let's actually start. You're going to be able to be with us until 45 after the hour. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Okay, great. And if any of you have questions for Robert Greenwald, our telephone number 866-987-THOM, although I have a lot of questions for you to start out with. Robert, you have not only are you very familiar with the immigration debate and battle and whatnot in the United States, but you also have you've produced a video on this. Am I not correct?
We actually have, Tom, one of the major campaigns out of Brave New Foundation is Cuéntame, which was started by Axel Caballero and his colleagues at Brave New Foundation. And it's been very active and productive on the issues near and dear to Latinos, including immigration. We've had a whole 6 months on Immigrants for Sale, where we've gone into the private prisons. We did an Do I Look Illegal campaign last year, and we're going to be continuing there, focusing on student debt, which is disproportionately hitting young black and Latino women and men.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just play a very, very short clip from Immigrants for Sale to set this up. This is clip number 4, Shane.
The detention of migrants is a multi-billion dollar industry.
One in which immigrants are traded like products.
They are for sale to the highest bidder.
Who benefits and who profits? Corrections Corporation of America, or CCA, the GEO Group, and the Management and Training Corporation combined own over 200 facilities in the nation.
That's pretty mind-boggling, Robert Greenwald, that even illegal immigrants, in quotes, undocumented human beings here in the United States, people who are not citizens, have become a commodity for the machine.
Yes, and of course this is something, Tom, that you've talked and written about for years, which is the fact of the profit motive entering into all kinds of places where it has no business being, you know, the notion of profiting. And here, with the immigrants for sale, what the Cuéntame folks have done, and there's some great videos about it, and they're really very helpful to people, is literally the private prisons give money to elect politicians who then pass laws that lock up more people, which is a source of more income for the private prisons. So you see in one fell clear swoop the way that each affects the other, and the disaster when you put the for-profit motive, or market, as it's like to be, as they like to call it, into an area it doesn't belong.
All right, and this is why the United, or part of why the United States has more people in prison, either on a per capita basis or even in absolute numbers, than any other country in the world. And we only have 300 plus million people here. China has a billion people here in their country. India has a billion people. We have more people in jail than either of those countries.
Yeah, it's truly extraordinary, and it's actually, we're going to be, in addition to the work of Cuéntame, that will continue on this issue, because the private prisons are continuing to be aggressive in their outreach. We're also going to be launching a campaign sometime, we hope, over the summer, focusing on the overuse of incarceration, the fact of exactly what you've just been saying, Tom, and an effort to have both a national debate about it and to call attention in that field where there are some very successful programs showing that we are safer and we spend less money by trying to fix and rehabilitate rather than lock up.
Yeah. And with regard to immigration, I'm curious your take on this move that the president has made. He's being attacked by right-wingers and the drudge-based press for having a year ago said there's not much I can do when the DREAM Act was being blocked by Republicans. There's not much I can do because there's this law in the books and I have to enforce it. And now he's basically telling his own, you know, Janet Napolitano, his own administration, don't enforce that law, which he has the right to do, by the way. He has the power to do it. He can't be forced to enforce laws, you know, of any kind, to the best of my knowledge. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, I think, you know, there's obviously been a big, robust debate. But I think first and foremost, for all of us to pause and to celebrate the extraordinary courage and passion and vision of the DREAM Act. I've met, I've talked, we've worked with, I'm sure you have, Tom, also many of your listeners and viewers. And they're really an inspiration to us all in so many ways. And so today, I think I'd like to take a moment, and you know, with your listeners, and applaud and celebrate that the lives for some, many of them, are going to be better as a result of this. Number one, number two, I think, and there've been some debates again about this online already. I think it's very interesting because my first take on this, I don't know how you or your listeners will feel, is that it's another indication of what we all need to be doing, which is putting pressure on. You know, the LGBT movement, I believe, certainly proved it, right? Mm. And now, this last week, sit-ins had started into Obama's offices, electoral offices, all around the country. And it's hard not to imagine that some of this was not a result of that pressure.
Yes, absolutely. Robert Greenwald is with us. He is the founder of Brave New Films and Brave New Foundation and a lot of Brave New cool stuff. You can check it out at bravenewfilms.org. We'll be right back with more Robert Greenwald.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
866-987-THOM, by the way, our telephone number. And Bernie Sanders, if you're looking for Senator Sanders, will be with us on Monday. He's giving a speech right now. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Robert Greenwald, our special guest today on Anything Goes Friday, and we will be getting to the Anything Goes part of Anything Goes Friday and as we head into our second and third hours in particular. But Robert, first of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
And I should say, bravenewfilms.org, other websites that are, you know, good central places where people can find a lot of your work?
Sure. Well, they can. I was actually just trying to type on Twitter as we were talking. I was on with you now, but they can certainly follow me at Twitter. And there's the Koch Brothers Exposed.com, which is the website. It's the Facebook page. It's the film itself. I've been talking at screenings around the country and been having.
I want to talk about that next. So
thank you and your help there.
And the Twitter is at Brave New Films.
It's just Robert Greenwald.
Robert Greenwald. Okay. Yeah. And so. In fact, I would have opened the show with this thing about Koch Brothers Exposed because they're in the news now. They're building this giant database to basically be able to activate at the micro, at this granular level of the individual, every conservative in America who's ever signed up for anything. But, you know, the president's speech kind of bumped that topic. But tell me about the Koch Brothers Exposed.
Well, and
what they're up to now.
Well, what they're not up to.
The
film itself, and again, you and your listeners have been the great supporters of getting the word out, is the result of, as we did with Fox and as we did with Walmart and as we did with the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, it's the result of a year and a half, maybe close to 2 years now, hard investigative work by the women and men at Brave New Foundation, who spent a lot of time digging into the details, who spent a lot of time finding videos, doing interviews. And so the Koch Brothers Exposed film is now a tool ready to be used by people who are screening it, giving it to libraries, doing it, screening it at churches, in their living rooms. The clips are available at the Koch Brothers Exposed website and the Facebook page. People are sending around the clips because... And, you know this, but just to repeat it for some of the other folks, is that the first step in taking back democracy is in shining a light on those who try to hide in the shadows. Mm-hmm.
And what do you know about this new strategy, this system? Is it thesis? No, themis?
Oh, the new database?
Yeah, this new giant database that they're building.
Yeah, they've been talking about it for a while, and what it's consistent with, Tom, and in this case I think it is important to acknowledge, though philosophically we couldn't disagree with them more, they're very, very smart and strategic the way they use their money and their resources. Mm-hmm. So they don't just, and there's, I think I mentioned this the last time, but it's so worth repeating, there's a great quote from David Koch, and he says, this was years ago, he said he realizes that politicians are like actors. They read from a script. And what he, David Koch, wants to do is write the script. So he doesn't wait till the last moment, spend all his money on lousy 30-second spots. He funds think tanks and position papers and activist groups, Americans for Prosperity, and this database, which makes great sense. It's a way to use their millions and billions to be able to reach people in a new, we're in a new world today, a new age, and to have it all accumulated so that they can reach them instantly and know as much about them as possible makes perfect sense. And funders who don't say there is one single bullet answer, they're funders who look across the spectrum, fund it all, and make sure that the different pieces work and interact with each other.
Yeah, and brilliantly. In fact, here's a 30-second clip from Koch Brothers Exposed that'll give you a sense, you, our listeners and viewers, of what Robert's talking about.
The Koch Brothers are the poster boys for the 1%.
We have 15 homes in this area, and maybe 11 people have died with cancer.
What they're actually trying to do is dismantle the whole public school system.
The Koch Brothers support laws that are the most aggressive attempt to roll back voting rights in this country.
The Koch brothers are funding think tanks spreading an enormous amount of disinformation about Social Security.
Causing cancers, ending public education? It's that serious, Robert.
Yeah, it really is, Tom. And that, those two sections, the cancer and the resegregating the schools, stand out in my mind for the, extraordinary investigative work that was done to find those communities, to engage those communities and then to be able to go out and talk and interview them.
Yeah.
And what we found, you know, was that people are hurting, and they're hurting as a result of ideology. The cancer piece, Tom Bain, may be the most hypocritical of all. Here's David Koch, who is a cancer survivor, who has spent great sums of money to help people who have cancer. But the cause of cancer goes to what he, Georgia Pacific, and others of his businesses are doing, and that's where they push back. That's where he spends money to buy the House Energy Committee so that there is no legislation to protect the rest of us, rather than say, let me take some more of my millions of dollars, not just for hospitals, those who are sick, but let me take more to investigate what's happening when you pollute at a certain level.
Right. What kind of cancer did he survive?
Prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer, okay. And he also ran for vice president of the United States in 1980 on the Libertarian ticket and failed. Do you think that a lot of this activism came out of that experience?
Well, I think, and it's actually interesting, in the film, we lay this out in the beginning, his father was a big John Bircher. So it goes back to really to the degree you believe in parents affecting their children. And as parents, we like to think we have some impact, in this case a negative one, but it goes back to Daddy Koch, to the John Birch, to growing up with that environment and getting a lot of money right from the beginning.
Yeah, and now they're worth, what, are they $25 billion each?
Yeah, I think it's more, and their numbers have gone up extraordinarily.
Amazing. Robert Greenwald with us, bravenewfilms.org. We'll be back with more of our conversation with Robert Greenwald right after this. 27 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I want to get into Sick for Profit here, the disaster of our healthcare industry. Another brilliant documentary that Robert Greenwald has made. This is to bring. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Robert Greenwald on the line with us, the founder of Brave New Films, bravenewfilms.org, and Twitter at Brave New Films, or at Robert Greenwald, excuse me, G-R-E-E-N-W-A-L-D. Robert, you're still here with us?
I certainly am, Tom.
Okay. Oh, great, and I can see you now. That's marvelous. It's been as you probably heard, we've had a few technological challenges today. Tell me about Sick for. Actually, let me play this clip. This just a little 18-second clip from Sick for Profit to set this up. This is from another one of the brilliant documentaries that you've produced. Here you go.
One California insurance company, Anthem Blue Cross, notified individual policyholders last week that their premiums would be going up by as much as 39% this year.
We don't act. This is just a preview of coming attractions.
I'd like to know where the premiums that we pay are going.
And so where are they going, Robert?
Well, as you well know, and what we did in the videos, we did it at a time, Tom, when, you know, the healthcare debate was beginning to be intense. But what we felt was missing, and we always look for what we can do that's not being done, you know, with limited resource. Anytime we make a decision to do one thing, it means we're not doing 10 others. What we felt wasn't being done was connecting the dots, which is, it's not that the system is too bureaucratic or too slow. The problem is that it's a system where the people who run it, the owners and the key executives, they make more money the less care they give you. So we connected those dots and said it's going into the pockets of insanely overpaid executives. We went out, we got videos of their mansions and their homes, and we said, look, instead of paying for your trip to the doctor, it's paying for this incredible home and mansion.
For example, what are these guys living in, like, you know, five-bedroom houses?
Yeah, five bedrooms are the small ones. So the houses, you know, and depending on which part of the country they are, of course, was how much they cost and how elaborate and how many other ostentatious toys they had. And then calling attention to the fact, again, that people, I don't think we realize, salaries of $10, $15, $20 million, bonuses of millions and millions of dollars. And it's important that people understand that because there's a motive in your not getting health care.
Right.
And so we did it with a series of shorts. I'm very excited because we're beginning this research now on the war costs, and it's a similar dynamic. The fact that we constantly are overpaying for weapons and systems we don't need that don't make us safer is because there's a motive. There's a motive for contractors. There's a motive for those companies that profit. And there's a motive for them hiring former military and hiring people who have worked as senators, members of the House, and their aides.
Well, and in fact, let's get into that. Clip number two here, Shane. This is a short piece from Rethink Afghanistan, another brilliant piece of filmmaking by Brave New Films by Robert Greenwald. Rethink Afghanistan.
Is your job here now as commander to try to slow down that Washington clock?
I think our job is, again, to show those in Washington that there is progress being made.
I think we're making progress in Afghanistan.
We have made progress in Afghanistan.
But we are not losing in Afghanistan.
Have you turned the tide?
I believe we're doing that now.
Yeah. Now, Robert, Afghanistan, when it was early on determined by the Bush administration that in all probability Osama bin Laden was responsible in some way or at least funding 9/11, the government of Afghanistan offered to arrest him and hand him over for trial in a neutral third country. George W. Bush said no, and he began dropping bombs on the poorest country in the world, or one of the two or three poorest. Afghanistan at that point in time had an annual GDP of under $3 billion. And we have spent how much there?
Well, it's probably going to be $1 trillion.
Which is $1,000 billion. So
yeah.
We could have basically just walked in and said, okay, we're going to build a school for everybody, a hospital for everybody. We'll rebuild all your highways, and we'll give you all $10,000 a year. It's mind-boggling. How did this happen?
Well, it is mind-boggling, Tom. And, you know, can you imagine if we'd gone out and said, okay, guys, instead of invading, occupying, and killing, which is going to make us more unpopular and less safe, let's take these sums of money and do the things that you just suggested. And everyone would say, oh, silly, naive, liberals, out of touch. But instead, we've gone ahead. We've had this extraordinary destruction of American and Afghani lives and families, children, women, you know, men and women coming home the rest of their lives. They are destroyed, the families destroyed, and it has gotten us not a damn thing. You know, I was in Afghanistan as research for the film,
mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be a genius, Tom. You get off the plane, you look around, the poverty hits you in the face. It grabs you by the gut. And then you look around in the other direction, and you see the most expensive military equipment rolling down these dirt streets, and the people just staring at it. And there it is. There it is. It says the policy that had no chance of working and was fundamentally flawed because there were problems you will never, ever solve by occupying and killing.
And these very, very poor people were seeing what they knew was millions of dollars worth of hardware going by. And they knew that it was all about death and destruction. And you know, enough of them have seen enough international media to know that, you know, other parts of the world are fairly rich. And they had to be thinking that our priorities are crazy. I mean, most Afghans didn't even know who Osama bin Laden was. What did they think we were there doing?
They really didn't know. And when I was there, at that point, and it's changed, I understand, but there was a significant amount of goodwill for Obama. He'd only been in office, I think, maybe 5-6 months. They wanted to they thought I could get a message to the president. You know, there was a certain different way of looking at the world and not understanding how it works in this country. But there was a profound disconnect between the notion that we were, quote, helping these people. And, you know, person after person I spoke to in Afghan, you know, many hated the Taliban, had bad experiences. But the last thing they wanted was us to spend all this money to occupy and to kill, because they knew that that was not going to work. It hasn't worked. And I think we need to say it. It's a disastrous failure, because if we don't say it's a failure, then it encourages the thinking, you know, you asked about how this happens. Well, it's a kind of bipartisan orthodoxy that accepts the solution to these problems is invade, occupy, or drone them to death.
Yeah.
And that's just a that's just inaccurate. It will never make us safer. It's only going to create enemies, and it's going to cost more than we can even imagine.
And it seems to always be promoted by the chicken hawks, by the people who, like Dick Cheney, got 5 deferments, or Mitt Romney got 4, or the people who were not old enough to go to Vietnam and thus, you know, didn't have the opportunity or weren't impressed into the opportunity of seeing the horrors of war. Dwight Eisenhower in 1952 ran on the platform. We play his TV ad on the show regularly. It's this cartoon of an elephant walking across a stage beating a giant drum, you know, those drum major drums, and it has the word peace on the drum. And the announcer said, "Vote for Eisenhower, vote for peace," a paid film. And he was campaigning on ending the war in Korea, and because he had seen the horrors of war. What has happened to why is it so pervasive in the Republican Party? Is it because the Democratic Party, you know, got burned with Vietnam? I mean, what accounts for the Bill Kristols of the world, these neocons, the Wolfowitzes, these guys who just, you know, they can't wait to, now they're calling for us to start a war with Iran.
I know. I thought that was really like a joke when I heard it. I mean, can you imagine these guys who've had failure after failure with their policy, the expenditure of all this money, all these lives, and yet they still go back to the same idea that somehow it didn't work in Vietnam, it didn't work in Iraq, it didn't work in Afghanistan, well, it'll for sure work in Iran, which, again, makes no fundamental sense. And I think it's a couple of things, Tom. You know, one of the problems has been that the fear among a lot of elected officials, first it was the fear of being soft on communism, and then it was the fear of being soft on terrorism. And that's had a terrible effect on policy. It's had a terrible effect. You know, Rachel Maddow's book is very good about this, the fact that that there's no checks on the presidential power anymore around war. And so every day there are different wars, and wars in Yemen and wars here and there. And part of it is, again, elected officials fearful of speaking out. And then there are people who just believe this is the only way to make us safer. And we've got to get on it, and we've got to start very hard talking, connecting the dots, and saying we're not safer.
Robert, we have just a minute left. I know you have to run to a fundraiser. Rethink Afghanistan, Sick for Profit, Immigrants for Sale, all the other projects you're doing. What are some of the other projects you'd like our listeners and viewers to know about?
Well, we talked about Koch Brothers, which I, you know, encourage people to have screenings now around the country and
Koch Brothers Exposed.
To help spread the word or send the clips around. And then we will be, you can go to our Facebook page or my Facebook page and get involved with our war costs, which is just beginning now. And we want to get like 1,000 people, 1,000 committed people who will be messengers and will help spread the word, will help organize, will help us figure out the policy. And in concert, as always with you, Tom, and I'm so appreciative and grateful for what you do. I, you know, really can't mention it enough. We will take on these big fights.
That's great. And the Facebook page, Robert, is which one?
You can go to War Cost Facebook page, or you can go to my Facebook page, or you can go to Rethink Afghanistan Facebook page.
Great.
Or
Robert.
Koch Brothers Facebook page. We have all kinds of Facebook pages.
All
You're listening Hang to the Tom there. Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Robert Greenwald, BraveNewFilms.org. Robert, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Great having you on, sir. We'll be back.
Talk to me.
So, welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and anything goes Friday. Bernie, as I said, will be with us on Monday and Friday of next week. We're going to have, because we've got no Bernie this week, we're going to have a twofer next week, and very much looking forward to that. I can't get enough of Senator Sanders. Mary, but right now we'll do Anything Goes Friday, whatever you'd like to talk about. Mary in Bernie, Texas, watching us on Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk to you about that article that Hightower wrote in Progressive about Dow genetically altering the corn using the pesticide that they had put in Agent Orange defoliant.
Yes. It's called Roundup, and it's typical retail sale mode, as I recall.
Well, no, this is Dad. I think Roundup is Monsanto. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Roundup Ready is Monsanto products. I don't know the name of the Dow one. I'm sorry.
Well, let me tell you what Agent Orange does to families. My husband must be a Marine Ordnance Officer for BMFA 122 in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive when they used it. Mm-hmm. A big, healthy, happy-go-lucky guy. Parkinson's, diabetes, and the worst of all, dementia. Spent the last 10 years of his life and depends the last three of that in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And our family lost that funny personality.
I'm so sorry to hear
that.
To
the dementia.
Yeah.
But that's what worries me about this. Our federal regulators have okayed it because it has not yet proven to cause cancer.
Yeah.
What can we do, Tom?
Well, I think that we need to be speaking out as often as possible and as loudly as possible and building social movements. Movement politics is the only thing we have left, frankly. I mean, you know, I'm all in favor of infiltrating the Democratic Party and becoming precinct committee persons and whatnot. But
if I were younger, I'd spend all my time in jail.
Yeah, or you mean standing out on the front lines where you might end up in jail.
You bet. Yeah. You bet. I'd be out there fighting.
Yeah.
I'm 83. I can't. I don't have the energy to hold up to it.
Yeah. Well, Mary, I wish you the very best, and thank you for the call. And
you, Tom, for what you do.
You're welcome.
There is nobody like you.
Well, thank you. And we all need to just keep spreading the word along and waking up as many people as we possibly can. David in Murphy's, California. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom, and that was a great show with Robert Greenwald. Thank you.
He's a brilliant man. I've been wanting for some time to showcase the multidimensionality of his work. And today when Bernie called and said that he's got to give this speech in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he couldn't get a room with a phone where he could do the show, we said, okay, great. This is the opportunity.
Two thumbs up to him. Hey, I don't understand these days. In the news, we hear that these countries like, I believe, Italy, Greece, Spain, and now Egypt are having their elected officials removed and replaced by some other people.
Yep.
Who seem to enact austerity,
yep.
Or shall we say a tourniquet on the economy to pay back the banksters.
Yep.
Don't these countries have a constitution?
Well, some of them may not. I mean, I don't believe that the UK has a constitution. I think they just have a collection of common law. I don't know how widespread that is. But whether a country has a constitution or not, I mean, the Republicans want to impose and have, to a large extent, been successful in opposing austerity here in the United States. In the states, they're certainly doing it. And at the federal level, they've blocked any anti-austerity measures by President Obama. So, you know, it's just, you know, whose side are you on? You know, it's they're in these countries. You've got a bankster. I mean, when Papandreou, the democratically elected prime minister of Greece, said, okay, let's put it to a referendum. Let's put it to a vote whether or not we're going to pay back the banksters and stay in the eurozone and continue to use the euro as our currency. Literally that week, he was removed from office and replaced by Papademos, who used to be the head of the Greek central bank, a banker.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Same thing in Italy. You know, you've got a bankster running Italy.
Okay,
as you point out in Egypt now, well, in Egypt it's the military. They kind of always ran the country. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there, and I don't think anybody is.
Well, who are they that overrule the elected officials, the people elected by?
They're the people with money.
And so, in other words, the people with money actually overthrow the elected,
yes.
the elected, and install their own, and
yes.
Don't expect a rebellion?
Well, I think that they hope that there won't be, but this is the great sin, I mean, of central banking. From 19, I think it was 48 to 73, something like that. There's about a 10 or 20 year period in Canada where they actually did away with a privately owned central bank and the government created its own currency. And I mean, right now, if the United States government wants to borrow money, they have to borrow money via the Fed, basically, from banks, and they have to pay interest to the banks. And, you know, it didn't used to be that way. Prior to 1913, it wasn't that way. And so here we've got a privately owned bank that is in control of our currency, and they loan us that money at profit. In Europe, you've got the European Central Bank, another privately owned bank that the Greeks are on the verge of telling where they can put their banking ideas. And all around the world, you see this in Canada, it's going on, in Mexico, it's going on. You see these basically privately owned banks, and many of them have connections to each other, some, you know, thus the Davos meetings and things like that. And you know, there's an economic, worldwide economic elite that is doing very well, thank you very much. And, you know, you saw a piece of it on display day before yesterday, when Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, came and speak before the United States Senate. And here's Mike Crapo and a couple of other senators who he was their largest campaign, lifetime campaign donor to, saying, oh, well, Mr. Dimon, you are so smart. You're the biggest banker in the world. We're so humbled that you would come here. Jim DeMint saying, oh, I saw you lost $2 billion. We lose $2 billion a day. And as John Stewart correctly pointed out, you know, oh, we just lost $14 billion, and all we've got is this crummy highway to show for it. I mean, it's governments don't lose money. They spend money, but banks lose money because they gamble. David, I think the solution to this is to wake up as many people as possible, as fast as possible, and say the banking system is broken. This is how Andrew Jackson got elected back in the 1830s, as I recall, was going up against the banksters. We need to be doing it again.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Amazing. The President of the United States gives a speech in the Rose Garden, and a right-wing wackadoodle, a blogger for Tucker Carlson's little right-wing site, interrupts him. And now the site is claiming, oh, that's what reporters are supposed to do. They're supposed to hold the president accountable. You know, I'm all in favor of reporters asking questions and demanding better press conferences and more frequent. I mean, Bush was really good at not having press conferences, for example. Romney's been spectacular at not having press conferences. But to heckle the president of the United States, I just don't see where it works. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, because the conservative playbook is, no matter how outrageous it is, no matter how big the lie, stand behind it. All right. Mitt Romney changes his position on something, Mitt Romney lies about something, stand behind it. Eventually people will believe the lie. So rather than apologizing, rather than backing down, Tucker and his buddies, instead of backing down and saying, well, you know, probably shouldn't have done that, they're saying, oh, well, you know, accountability, this is what the press does. I don't think so. Ed in Chicago. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Listen, I'm kind of disillusioned with Obama in a lot of ways, but I think it's vitally important because of the Supreme Court that he get elected, which is why yesterday when I heard that interview you had with, I think it was Brett Coburn, I'm a Teamster. I almost drove off the road. I was so disillusioned by that guy and this administration, as far as not showing any backbone to stand up to these guys.
Well,
I'll tell you what I told the White House hotline.
Sure.
If they think they have the Teamsters in the union, if the Obama administration think they have Teamsters and unions in their back pocket, they better think twice.
Yeah.
Because I listen to these guys talking around the time clock, and I got to tell you, they don't.
I know.
And coming across as milquetoast. And I mean, this whole thing, it's been years and years now of not wanting to stand up to these guys and call them out for what they're doing and not wanting to call a lie. And just, you know, people want to see some strength. And I know he's done very strong things. I know that, but I'm a, you know, political junkie. But the majority of the people who don't follow politics, they don't see that. They don't see that. All they see is weakness.
Yeah. I don't disagree at all, and I was surprised somewhat. I mean, I know that spokespeople for campaigns don't make policy, and as a result of a question from a talk show host, they're not going to go off script. And his script for the day yesterday, I guess it was when he was on, and this was the spokesperson for the Obama campaign, right, the communications director, was we're going to continue to try and reach across the aisle to the Republicans and try to find partners to work with, yeah, and make things happen. And that's what he said. I mean, you know, that has been the frame for the Obama presidency for the last 3 years. I don't think it's going to work for them. And I think that, you know, we've seen President Obama's probability of being elected at Intrade drop from over 70% to now it's 52%. I'm very concerned.
At the local coffee shop on Saturday mornings, I'm talking with Democrats. And again, I told the White House comment on this. I'm talking with people who want to see him get elected.
Right.
Who are just so fed up with what you just pointed out, that this refusing to call these people liars, the refusing to use plain language and call them out, just comes across as
The Republicans are playing war with hand grenades and napalm flames, flamethrowers, and the Democrats are playing softball, you know, and wiffle ball even. And I'm sorry, you go into a match where the other guy's got a flamethrower and you've got a wiffle ball and a plastic bat, you're going to get your butt handed to you.
And hopefully they'll wake up. And if not Obama, at least get Biden and get somebody out there.
Yeah.
I don't mean to even blame just Obama, because this is the Democrats as a whole. When they go on the talking head, they do the same thing.
There's a fascinating op-ed in today's New York Times about a Democratic pollster who did a focus group and found that basically everybody in the focus group was saying just what you're saying, and was saying, you know, will the White House figure this out? Will the Obama campaign figure this out? I don't know the answer to that question. I sure hope they do. But, you know, we will see, Ed. The one truism that I suppose works in, you know, in some kind of rational or semi-rational way in our favor is that, you know, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, how long is it until November? It's about July, August, September, October, November,
like
4 months. 4 months is an eternity in politics. An election can turn in a week or two. And which is why, you know, Rove and his buddies are trying to gather $1 billion to turn it at the last week. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Ed, thank you very much for the call. Mike in San Diego. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Hartman. I just wanted to ask you a quick follow-up question. I called about 3 weeks ago saying that if women controlled the planet, would we have aircraft carriers? I hope you can remember that.
I would
like a follow-up question where... Okay, you came to the conclusion that when men run things, what you end up with is war. When women run things, what you end up with is a stable society that works. So, quick question, where does that leave us?
Well, I think, you know, step one was back in 1919 or 1920, giving women the right to vote, you know, bringing them into the political dialogue. And here in the United States, and now, you know, all this pushback on the Republican war against women. And it's not just the Republican war against women. I mean, more women die at the hands of their husbands and boyfriends in the United States than have died than all of us have died at the hands of terrorists or the combatants in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. And so, you know. Yeah, and so this is, you know, testosterone really is the most dangerous drug in the world, and the experience of the Iroquois Confederacy and many other tribal societies that are matriarchal and matrilineal does show that when women run the show and men, you know, do the grunt work, do the hunting and fishing, and the women are running the show, you don't have wars. You have a functional society, and we need to figure out how to, you know, in Norway, for example. By law, 40% of the parliament has to be women, and I think it's over 40% now. In Iceland, you know, the same thing. There's a number of countries that say, you know, a certain percentage of the lawmakers have to be women, and we'll do whatever it takes to make that happen. I think that we should be looking at something like that here in the United States. Although, you know, again, the right wingers would just scream like, you know, the right wing white men would scream like crazy about it. But Mike, excellent question. Thank you very much. Mary in Littlemount, South Carolina. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I believe sometime back, I can't remember, a few weeks back or something, I believe you were commenting on the generations.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to call up and comment. I'm 64, by the way. I've been studying the generations for decades now, and it seems that they have come up with a conclusion. There was one book written by two authors, one from Hale, one from Harvard, and they were talking about it's cyclical, and they could almost predict kind of what's going to happen politically and culturally, generational-wise.
Yeah, the book you're talking about is called The Fourth Turning, and there's another one that is by Strauss and Howe, Neil Strauss and Neil Howe, and I forget Strauss's first name. And they also wrote a book called, I think, The Generations of America or something like that. They wrote two books on this topic.
Yeah, and it was very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and The Fourth Turning is absolutely shocking because it was written in 1995, 1996. I think it was published in either 96 or 97. And in that book, they said that because of these generational changes, and we've had Neil Howe on this program a couple of times, and he's over at conversationswithgreatminds.com. There's a half-hour conversation I had with him. You can see the video of it there. He back in the 90s, they were predicting that sometime in the 2000s, there would be a giant economic crash and, you know, there would be an act of terrorism, that there would be war, that they, you know, they basically were, you know, it seems like they were looking into a crystal ball. What they were really doing was they were looking back 80 years and then 80 years ago to the Great Depression, World War II, 80 years before that to the crash of 1857 and the Civil War, 80 years before that to the crash of the 1760s and the Revolutionary War, 80 years before that, you know, and on it goes. Mary, thank you for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday. Your topics as well as mine right after this, 15 minutes past the hour. Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Catherine in Long Beach, California. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I have some good news. They're on Facebook, you can get on to Catholics United, mm-hmm. which is a website put on by the nuns. My background is 1 of 10, Irish Catholic family, grew up over dinner talking politics. Now, people like Ryan, O'Reilly, Hannity, we would have called them supers. Or fools. Supers because that came down from the Irish when the English tried to take their language, their and starved them to death and their religion. And if you would accept the soup from them in order to survive, it went down generations.
Wow.
Who was the super? So just, you know, and so the good news is we Catholics that grew up in the church and are still devout, my kids, my husband and I were both taught by nuns. We learned the Christ-like ways of helping the poor, of caring about who has medical. These men have lost their way, and they have lost their souls. So the Catholics out there, we need your votes. Go back to your roots. Vote for the party that's going to help you and those around you. Don't lose this culture.
Yeah, and Catholics United is a great and progressive largely progressive organization that but what's so weird is that Bill what's his name you know with his little right wing Catholic group, he uses the word Catholic, I think he only has a few members, is the guy who constantly gets all the press. Yeah, Bill Donahue or whatever his name is.
Embarrassing. Shocking.
Oh yeah.
This is not culture. This is not our tradition. This is not our church.
Yeah, well said, Catherine. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for speaking out. Lynn in Chicago. Hey, Lynn, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having it. You know what? I wanted to ask you, because John Boehner keeps talking about 30 jobs bills that he has in the Senate, and I haven't heard anybody address this at all. What is he talking about?
Well, he's talking about things like Paul Ryan's plan to privatize Medicare. He thinks that once Medicare is privatized, that'll create a lot of jobs for, I don't know, bankers, I guess. He wants to cut taxes on millionaires. That's going to create a lot of jobs, he thinks, but probably for CPAs. I don't, you know, maybe. There are no jobs bills. John Boehner is lying. It's very simple. There are no jobs bills. There are right-wing agenda bills that will further impose austerity in the United States, that will make this country, as they did in the UK. I mean, even David Cameron's government, which is openly conservative, is revisiting the insanity of their policies. They tried this the so-called conservative austerity, and what it did is it threw the United Kingdom into a net negative GDP. I mean, they lost 0.5%, and they're looking at it going, oh, gee, that didn't work. Let's try something else. So Boehner is just basically lying. There's no other way to describe it. There's a good analysis of it if you want to read it over at the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress. It was up a day or so ago, but if you click on the economics tab at the very top, I'm sure it'll pop up. And they basically said, you know, okay, Boehner says he's got all these jobs bills. What's in them? And some of them, I mean, one of them was like naming a post office or something. I mean, they're just like, they're absolutely nothing. But again, these guys completely believe in the big lie theory that if you tell a lie big enough and loud enough and frequently enough, people will buy it. It is, as George W. Bush called it, catapulting the propaganda. So that's what they're up to. Lynn, thank you for the call. Scott in Rockford, Illinois, also listening to WCPT. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good job.
Thanks.
I just want to react to that gentleman that called, and he was a Teamster worker.
Yeah.
A union worker, and he says a lot of the talk around the water cooler is that a lot of these people vote Republican. Well,
I'm not sure that he was saying that. I think what he was saying is that they're not enthusiastic about voting for President Obama.
Okay, well, Tom, I don't mean to interrupt, but
go
back to Madison, okay? Ed Schultz said that 30-some percent of the union vote, union members vote Republican. Now,
right.
I wish that it would be repeated constantly on talk radio by you and others that to remind these people, these people that are voting Republican are voting against their own interests because the Republican Party wants to destroy unions and it's going to affect their pension. And, you know, I mean, they've worked all their life for a pension and health care, and that's all going to be compromised. If they can't realize that, I can't believe it.
Yeah, and a decent wage and vacations and reasonable work hours and work conditions where they're not going to die on the job. And again, more people die on the job in the United States because of preventable accidents than have ever been killed by terrorists in this country. It's you know, we have our priorities inside out. You're absolutely right, Scott. So
the problem of it is they just listen to the same garbage all the time.
Yeah.
On the radio.
I don't disagree. We do have a major propaganda problem in this country. Thank you very much for the call, Scott. George in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, George, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call and keep working for the people.
You got
Tom,
it.
Has anyone checked statistics to find out the percentage of millionaire politicians, upper class, and Tea Party ultra conservative members?
Yes.
Who got their education through federal funding, like GI Bill and things like that?
Oh, that's a good question.
And then they want to close schools and up the tuition fees.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I mean, America is the least economically and socially mobile country in the developed world. So the biggest predictor of your status in America right now is who your parents were. So
yeah.
The Senate, there are a few exceptions, and Bernie Sanders, Sherrod Brown, there's a couple, you know, maybe a handful of exceptions, but by and large the Senate is all millionaires and always has been, and I'm mm-hmm. guessing most of their parents were millionaires or something close to it. In the House of Representatives, when the Tea Party wave came in and almost 100 Tea Party guys got elected, that was the first time that the House of Representatives crossed the 50% threshold of millionaires in the House of Representatives. So some of that might be attributable to inflation, too. But I think that it was, you know, the Republicans took it, and rich people are going into politics in a big way. And again, thanks to the Supreme Court. George, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls right after this. Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. And Tom in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi. I enjoy listening to Miss Bernie today. And
he will be back on Monday.
But I enjoyed talking to you and listening to you in Greenwald, and you inspired me to give you a call. And I have an absurd solution, and it seems like this is the time for absurd solutions because the right seems pretty absurd.
Okay.
But Obama missed a great opportunity when he came in to not pick up the war. Under Obama, I mean, he's spending around $1.3 trillion. He cut a trillion from the war, brought the troops back, closed the bases, stopped the Petraeus-led war on Americans, and took that budget and put it on the economy in terms of creating jobs in the United States and also trying to deal with climate change. I'm a climate scientist, and so I was working at NASA. And so this, do you think it's an absurd idea, the idea of completely closing down the military and cutting off $1 trillion?
No, I think it's a really good idea, and I totally agree with you. And in fact, President Eisenhower would have agreed with you. It was a speech he gave to the American Association of Newspaper Editors, and it's famously known as the Cross of Iron speech. And you have it, Shane? Let me play this for you. This is Dwight Eisenhower, and it's Tom. Thank you for the call. You can listen to it on the TV. This is the president of the United States for 8 years, but not just the president of the United States. This is the man, and not just a Republican. This is the man who led the invasion of Europe by Allied forces to liberate Europe from the Nazis. This is a man who, I mean, you can't get more military than Dwight Eisenhower. They don't even have five-star generals anymore, if my understanding is correct. I mean, he was one of the last, right? He knew what he was talking about, and listen carefully to this audio, because like I said, it's not the world's best audio, but listen carefully to this speech, because in it he says, a single bomber would be paid for by, and then he goes through a list, a single destroyer would be paid for by, and then he goes through a list. And he's talking about the cost of having a perpetual war machine. Ladies and gentlemen, the former president of the United States, Dwight David Eisenhower.
A burden of arms, draining the wealth and labor of all people, a wasting of strength that defies the American system or the Soviet system or any system to achieve true abundance and happiness for the peoples of this earth. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed. Those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this, a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
Humanity hanging from a cross of iron. And I'll tell you, you know, living here in Washington, D.C., Louise and I rented a car when we first moved out here. We had to go out and buy some furniture. And driving through the suburbs of Virginia, where the defense contractors and the lobbyists live, in these multi-million-dollar mansions, just, you know, gated community, mile after mile after mile of gated communities. The richest zip code in the United States is no longer Beverly Hills. It's right outside Washington, D.C. And it's the military machine. And they spread that wealth around quite liberally, shall we say. Wrong phrase, but you get it. Kyle in Schenectady. Hey, Kyle, what's up?
Hey, hello, Tom. Well, great topic for my call because I wanted to talk about the military-industrial complex and in specific about what has happened since Eisenhower. I personally have some knowledge of this because I am a scientist and I was employed by the DOD in the mid-80s where they wanted to take advantage of an invention that I had And then actually, in the end, they wound up stealing the invention, claiming that it was worth no money, but yet they're still using it in naval research and naval submarines. So my point would be, and I'd like you to talk about this, is that in light of today's NDAA, legislation and the fact that now we're going to have drones that are going to be able to be flown over United States territory and all that stuff. The military industrial complex is basically made up of a very small amount of families of the United States, and the number of individuals could probably be named if you could actually find them. They're probably less than 10,000 that work in this whole aspect that are making all the money off of it.
At least executives.
What can you do to expose this?
Well, I think that, you know, it's something that people have been working on since Dwight Eisenhower gave that speech. I mean, and that was when he was president, for that he gave that speech in 1961, and in his farewell address, he talked about, you know, we must beware of the military-industrial complex, and their influence can be pernicious, and you know, we have to stop it at every turn. We've got that clip also, Shane, if you can find it. And it's probably worth. I love revisiting some of these things. But I think that the problem that we're facing is not, you know, an out of control military industrial complex. That's there and that's real. You could say the same thing about the private for profit prison complex. Why do we have more people incarcerated than any place in the world? You could say the same thing about why is there $1 trillion in student loan debt in the United States? Well, because we've got this private for profit student loan industry, and you can't discharge student debts. So on Alternet, there's a great story about a guy whose kid died, and now this guy makes $21,000 a year as a gardener, and he's being hounded by these bill collectors because you can't discharge student loan debts in bankruptcy. Something that Dick Durbin is trying to fix, but what a god awful piece of legislation that was back during the Bush years. So this whole issue of it's called Eisenhower Five Clips. Yeah, you find it? Okay, here. Yeah, here we go. This Dwight Eisenhower. This is from his farewell address, and there's a couple of pieces to this. And I may have. Does it have the individual breaks in it? Do you see those, Shane? You don't. You got the whole thing. Okay. Well, let's listen to it and see how it goes.
Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
There you go. You can cut it right there. I mean, he continues along those lines, and it's a brilliant speech, Eisenhower's farewell address. Just in many ways, it echoes Washington's farewell address, which was actually written for George Washington by James Madison. But, you know, George Washington was totally on board with it, where Shane says, I don't have a clip of that. I can't play that. Sorry. But in Washington's farewell address, he warns us against foreign entanglements. You know, don't get involved. You know, look out for your peeps here at home. I mean, let's just be involved with ourselves. And Washington was so right. Eisenhower was so right. And what happened in 1973 when Richard Nixon elevated to the Supreme Court Lewis Powell, who had just months before written a document, a memo to his friend, the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, about how business people and rich people could take over our government. And then Nixon put him on the Supreme Court, and then Powell started driving the Supreme Court in this direction of, in the late 70s, the Buckley versus Vallejo decision, saying that money actually is not property, it's speech. And then in the 1980s, as I recall, the First National Bank versus Bilotti decision, saying that corporations are not just collections of people who have a special tax advantage and a way of doing business. No, no, they're people. And then combining the two in 2010 with Citizens United. I mean, you know, Lewis Powell is long gone, but his legacy lives on. And it's a problem for us all.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we're going to check in with the Talk Radio News Service, but we will be getting back to your calls. Every single line is slammed. My apologies for going off on these rants. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Anything Goes Friday, so let's pick up your calls. Terry in Silver Spring, Nevada. Hey, Terry, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to talk about, I didn't catch her name. She's a representative for Michigan. She's a Democrat, and she was trying to speak on the House of Representatives, and they turned off her mic.
Yes.
And they barred her from ever speaking again, or what's up with that?
Well, she was referring to the Republican war on women in the state of Michigan, and she
right.
said words to the effect of, you know,
the
I don't want you.
Vasectomy, yeah.
Yeah, that she didn't want them legislating in her vagina, and that she was trying to bring a bill to the floor that would cause the restrictions that they were putting on birth control, and this wasn't even abortion, to apply to vasectomies as well. And that's the point at which they cut her off. So I guess, Terry, that they cut her off for trying to be an equal with the men, which doesn't apparently fly with Republicans. Terry, I thank you very much for the call. Victoria Jones is on the line with us at the Talk Radio News Service. This Talk Radio News Service report is brought to you by the German Embassy, which wants you to know that Germany supports the European strategy to strengthen the euro through fiscal stability, solidarity, and growth. You can learn more online at germany.info. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, the president announced this afternoon that his administration will block deportations of hundreds of thousands of young illegal immigrants who have been brought to the country as children under the age of 16, declaring that it was the right thing to do for those affected and for the country. He said the action's being taken really because he needs to fix the broken immigration system. He says it's not being done. He pointed out that the Dream Act was passed by the Democrats. Republicans walked away from it. Republicans blocked it, says the bill hasn't changed. The things that's changed, apparently, is the politics. And he says in the absence of any immigration action from Congress, it basically saying he needs to take action. So he is. So what's really happening is that they are having their deportations deferred for a couple of years, and if they can demonstrate they meet very specific criteria, such as being in the country today, for example, they will be eligible to receive deferred action subject to renewal and eligible to apply for work authorization. This could apply to about 800,000 people, maybe up to a million.
Right, people who they were brought to the country before they were
16 years old,
right. And
they are less than 30 now.
Under 30, and that they have graduated from high school, have no at least five continuous years, no criminal background, have been here for at least five continuous years, graduated high school, or served in the military.
Right.
Now,
right.
Is this his choosing not to enforce the law, or does he have the latitude within the law to make these kinds of qualifications of the way that the immigration laws are enforced?
Well, this is what's so interesting about immigration law. It depends how you look at it. Some people might say that he doesn't have this authority, and I think he'll be challenged. But immigration law is really interesting, and I've dealt with immigration law. A lot of it has to do with rules and not law.
Hmm. And the executive branch can just make rules.
Right, and that's why a good immigration attorney is up on the rules and is constantly reading the most recent rules.
Right.
Because and how the rules have changed.
Oh,
so it's a question of how it's being enforced.
Right.
So can he do this? It's not an executive order, apparently. That's not what it is. It is, according to the administration, a shift in the way that deportation resources are focused.
Well,
if that's the case, he probably can do it.
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, he's deported more people than George W. Bush did. He had refocused those resources toward deporting people, and now he's backing away from that. I find it fascinating.
It is, and he will continue, of course, to focus on deporting, those who are national security risks, those who are felons, all those high-risk people. They will continue to focus on those.
Yeah.
What they were finding was that even when they were focusing on those, these young people were getting swept up.
Now, this fellow from the website that I'm not going to name, who heckled the fellow who I'm not going to name, I really don't think he should get any kind of publicity or notoriety for it, but he heckled the president. Will he ever again be able to get a White House press pass?
Well, I've been asking questions about that of a person who I'm friendly with, who's on the White House Correspondents Association, and they don't issue the press passes. The White House does. I don't know what action they're going to take. They can. I mean, I don't think he has a permanent pass. I think he just got a day pass.
Right.
I don't think he's a permanent member of the press corps. I need to check on that.
That's what's being reported, is that he just had a day pass, that he's
right,
basically a blogger for this website.
Right. So, yeah, because I don't think he's a journalist per se. Well, it's not really a newspaper per se either.
Right.
So they can refuse him a pass. They could refuse that outlet or that organ access if they wish to do so.
Yeah. Well, let's.
It would be huge fodder for the right wing.
Yeah. Let's hope they do. I mean, I remember when Obama first came into office and he said, we're not going to recognize Fox News as a real news organization because they're an advocacy group. And then the White House backed down on that. I don't think they should have backed down.
Right. And they did. And they're sitting in the front row. And Ed Henry does a great job, asks very pertinent, brilliant questions. He's one of the best journalists in the room, in my opinion.
Really?
I have great respect
I have always referred to Ed Henry as that little weasel.
No, Ed Henry's very brainy.
Huh, okay.
Interesting, brainy guy.
Oh, okay.
Yes, worth a second look. He might ask questions on the topics that Fox News people are interested in.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, I remember when Ed Henry was at CNN and he was pretending to be an unbiased reporter and he was constantly throwing out these right-wing talking points, and that's why I always called him that little weasel.
But
now that he's at Fox, I mean, he's right where he should have been all along, I suppose.
You get him on national security issues and spying issues and things like that, and you listen and watch the way his mind works.
Uh-huh.
Really interesting, really clever thoughts. A very interesting guy.
Huh. Okay. Well, you learn something new every day, and not judging people is probably wise. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
This is Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the German Embassy. You can learn more online at germany.info. Back with more with Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our Anything Goes Friday, although in the first hour we had a lot of Robert Greenwald, which was really cool, because Robert Greenwald is an amazing, amazing guy. Gary in Chicago. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I was just calling a couple days ago. I couldn't get through when you were talking about the conservative politician.
Gary, your phone is breaking up terribly. You want to try that sentence one more time?
Yeah, calling about this occurrence of sociopathy in politics.
The occurrence of sociopathy in politics. Gary, I'm going to have to drop you, but I don't know the percentage of people, and I'm not sure what your question was. I'm sorry your phone was flaky. I'm assuming it's your phone. Matt in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hey, Tom, nothing much. An earlier caller had said that he wasn't sure why people were out there voting against what was in their best interest. And I was wondering the same thing, but I finally figured out it doesn't really have anything to do with politics. I have a friend who has 20 reasons to vote Democratic and none to vote Republican. And I was talking to him, and he finally came out and said that he sees the Republican Party as rich white people and the Democratic Party as minorities. And because, well, he may be a tad racist, he likes to align himself with the rich white guys.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm trying to stress to him that politics is not about black versus white. It's about rich versus poor and the middle class, and he just doesn't get it, and I'm trying to get through to him, Tom, but it's real tough. I try to tell him that in actuality, Republicans are 5% rich people and 95% people wishing they were rich white people.
Right.
And
yeah, there's this famous saying that working class people around the world know that they're working class. In America, working class people think that they're temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. And, if they just get the right lottery ticket, or if they just, it's the land of opportunity. When in fact, we are the least socially mobile of all the developed countries in the world. And in the United States, the best predictor of your social standing, your economic class, your social class is what was that of your parents. Yeah, but still, there's that bizarre notion. I would say to a certain extent, this is the failure of the Democratic Party's messaging and the success of the Republican Party's messaging. And I don't think that there's another way to say it beyond that, because they have succeeded, with very careful focus group, Frank Luntz, political genius, language genius, using NLP and all the other tools available. Don't call it the estate tax or inheritance tax, call it the death tax. Don't call them rich people, call them job creators. Don't talk about reducing or raising the taxes on rich people, talk about taxes in general and tax burdens, so as if everybody has this tax burden. So I'm frankly very concerned about this. I mean, I wrote a book about this 4 years ago, just in time for the election, and called Cracking the Code, about how language is used and how political language is used. George Lakoff has written several books on this. And, he's been a consultant to a number of politicians and whatnot. But I don't think anybody's, Democrats somehow think that because they have the right program, they have the right policies, they're doing things that actually help people, that people know that. And the problem is that people don't know that. And there's a whole lot of people who are making a whole lot of money making sure that people don't know that. Tom in Irvine, California. Hey, Tom, what's up?
My comment is regarding Syria, and my reading of the situation there is this. A lifelong Michigan Democrat family here, and in good conscience, I don't think we can vote for Hillary Clinton when we hear reports in the alternative press like Russia Today, BlacklistedNews.com, or LandDestroyer.com that the Free Syrian Army anti-Assad militants are being funded and directed from Washington think tanks like the National Endowment for Democracy. It's outrageous that after millions of people watched Obama's inauguration and rejected the neocon doctrine of preemptive war, that Hillary Clinton has the gall to go into Syria and Libya and commit war crimes and push for regime change when the American people stated in the 2008 elections there was no more war that we wanted. So I think that we have to.
We have
vote
not,
for, vote
Tom.
For
we did. We did as
vote
part.
We need to vote
Tom,
our conscience and vote for.
Tom, as part of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, we joined in bombing Libya, right? And I think that was wrong. I think it was a mistake, but we did it. With regard to Syria, President Obama has been very outspoken that there may be right wing think tanks in the United States who are helping fund the rebels. I don't think the president can start or stop that unless you want to put them on the list of terrorists. And MEC is in the process of being delisted right now. That has to do with Iran. But the president has, I guarantee you, if John McCain was president, if you want to vote your conscience, if John McCain was president, we would have been bombing Syria a long time ago. He's so hungry for war. We would have been bombing Iran. We would have been bombing Libya. We would have ground troops there. We would have twice as many troops in Iraq. We'd be, and on and on and on. So, our policies may not be perfect. They may even be counterproductive. I don't honestly know. I think that the situation in Syria is a very complex one. But what I've been hearing out of the State Department is that, and you know, not like I'm unique. I mean, you can read it in the papers too. Is that this president and our administration is concerned that if we overtly start supporting the rebels, I mean, it's a really tough one because on the one hand, you've got just civilians being slaughtered by Assad, you know, by a crazed dictator. On the other hand, you've got multiple factions in that country, from the Alawites to the Shia to the Sunnis to people of non-Muslim religions. And you know, what the State Department's position has been, at least my understanding of it, is that if we were to overtly be assisting the rebels, that, in other words, if we were to amp this thing up to the level of a civil war, there would be a bloodbath. On the other hand, there already is, to a certain extent, a bloodbath. So I don't see a simple solution here, and I don't think that saying this is something that should turn any election is, you know, well, whether you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016, I don't even think she's going to run, but we'll see. Gary in Granite City, Illinois. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Yeah, Thomas, it's always a privilege to talk to you. I love hearing you. I want to talk about these. It seems to be the main goal of the Republican Party simply to strip out each and every governmental function, big or small.
At least any governmental function that helps anybody except billionaires. They want to make sure that we continue to hand $3 billion a year to the oil industry.
Oh, yeah.
They want to make sure we continue to hand $2 billion a year to the big ag industry. They want to make sure that, you know, so there are exceptions to that rule.
I would like to talk. There's a few still left, Tom. I'd like to talk about one. Maybe you can identify with this. It's called the St. Louis County Animal Control Center. You know, I'm 61 years old. I was in the market for a cat, a pet, mm-hmm. you know. So I went in there, and there were a huge selection of nice dogs and cats. And I went over to the cat section, and, you know, some of them were pawing at the glass doors trying to get some attention from the humans or get some love from the humans, you know. And I was really impressed. They had a nice, friendly staff there, and this is a great example of a terrific government function.
Right.
You know, the Republicans have not killed all of them, Tom.
Well, they would figure out a way to privatize the animal shelters. I mean,
you couldn't. You know, it's too big. You know, I picked out a nice cat. She's probably less than a year. I'm 61, so we'll probably both pass away about the same time. So I've got a life partner, Tom.
That's sweet. Gary, thank you for sharing the story with us and reminding us that there's all kinds of things that we do for ourselves, we collectively do for ourselves, which is what we really need to call government. I mean, there are times when government is an it out there, but by and large, it's ours. It's us. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with Anything Goes Friday, right after this brief opportunity for you to support your local station. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Just a reminder, we're going to have brunch with Bernie on Monday and Friday of next week, because Bernie couldn't be here this week, so he's going to give us a twofer. Mark Taylor Canfield with the Occupy Movement, Occupy Seattle, blogging about the Occupy Movement at Huffington Post and other places. Mark, you have a report for us.
Yes, I do, Tom, and I want to thank you for speaking out against the NATO treaty. You know, GATT, the WTO, of course, folks in Seattle have been fighting those kind of organizations since 1999, so thanks for having the courage.
Yeah, it's not NATO, it's NAFTA. But, you know, I have my problems with NATO, too, but NAFTA, I think, is what you're talking about, all these trade treaties. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, I meant NAFTA, GATT, the FTAA, all of those treaties have basically outsourced our jobs and reduced labor and environmental protections. So, and that also is one of those, you know, neither left or right issue, because I remember a lot of really conservative folks back in the days of Nixon and afterwards speaking the same kind of language. So
Ross Perot based a presidential campaign on it and took almost 20% of the vote. You know, so
Ross Perot saying, you know, get ready for the sucking sound. Well, we've definitely heard that. We have you know, we have a huge unemployment problem right here in Washington State, but obviously across the country. Also, Tom, I wanted to give a shout out to my friends at Free Speech TV and encourage people to tune in on Wednesdays at 5 for their Occupy the Media program. That's a really good way to find out what's happening in the activist movement.
That's great. And is also, that 5 o'clock Pacific time?
Yes.
So that would be 8 p.m. Eastern time.
Eastern time.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
And also through Free Speech Radio News on the Pacifica Radio Network, they're experiencing financial problems again, of course, because a lot of the alternative media doesn't accept corporate sponsorship and doesn't have advertising and doesn't really have a budget for any kind of promotion or advertising. So yep. I want to encourage people to support Free Speech Radio. It came out actually out of the free speech, the Berkeley Free Speech Movement, and spread across the country to a whole flagship of stations. But I am one of those reporters, and I get paid by a foundation called Pacifica Reporters for Free Speech. And the reason that we have a separate foundation to pay us is so that Free Speech Radio News has its own editorial content and isn't controlled in any way by the Pacifica Radio Network. So
that is great.
Amy Goodman has been out there speaking in favor of Free Speech Radio News. I know Howard Zinn, when he was with us, he donated a lot of his videos and books to help raise money for us. So I'm encouraging people to support alternative media because I hear all these complaints about how the corporate media isn't covering, especially activist events in the Occupy movement. And I just want to say, well, get out there and support the alternative media because they're the only people that are going to be there for you, and they deserve your support.
So yeah, well, they're not the only people. There's also in the commercial world, and a lot of people are unaware of this, there are a lot of good independent, locally owned radio stations and some that are big corporate chains, but whatever. I mean, you know, who are carrying progressive programming, including this program. And, of course, you can't support them with a check, but you can support them by calling their sponsors and thanking them for keeping the program on the air, shall we say. So there's a variety of ways. But, yeah, I'm totally with you with Free Speech Radio, Free Speech TV, all of the above. But, Mark, you wanted to report on the Occupy movement.
Yeah, and also AM 1090 is a commercial station here in Seattle, but they do a great job. They have you on the air, Norman Goldman, Mike Malloy, a lot of really great people.
Yep.
Well, here in Seattle today, there's a rally at Westlake Park at 3 p.m., and that's with the SEIU, and it's folks standing up all over the country for janitorial workers. So I wanted to let everybody in Seattle know that that's happening today at 3. There's also the Occupy gathering that's happening June 30th through July 4th in Philadelphia, and those Occupy caravans have already left, and sounds like people on the conference calls I've been organizing with are really excited about that event. So I know even some pretty mainstream folks like Roseanne Barr is going to be there. I know Taibbi from Matt from Rolling Stone is going to be there speaking. I'll be there. There'll be a lot of really interesting folks gathering from across the country. And one thing that I there was a shout out from New York City, or actually from the New York occupiers, about a rule change, a new rule that Governor Cuomo has passed allowing fracking in 10 different counties in New York. So
right.
I wanted to let everybody know that that's going to be a really, really big issue for the Occupy groups in
it's
New York City.
It's a camel's nose under the edge of the tent. Yeah.
Yes, they're coordinating that. And then one last quick thing is that I just want to give people a heads up that the Seattle Police Department has applied through the FCC for licenses to fly drones over our city. So that is obviously going to be a big issue soon.
Yeah, and Rand Paul has proposed legislation to say, wait a minute, you can't use a drone to look in my house until you have a warrant. And it's one of the rare occasions when I'm with Rand Paul. Mark Taylor Canfield, Occupy Seattle. Mark, thank you very much for the report. Dick in Harrisburg, Virginia. Hey, Dick, what's up?
I'm working on it. We'll get that straight. It's Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Harrisonburg.
A question that I'd like to see if you could maybe talk about a little bit. Mm. If Matthew 25 in the Bible, that all Christians use, including Republicans and Democrats alike, when you do away with all these social programs, what do you have left?
Private charity, according to the Republicans.
There is no private. What kind of private charity? From a corporation donating $1,000 to a local charity, which will run out in the first day?
Yeah, that's how it typically works.
We both know that can't work, don't we? Now, the next thing on the agenda, I just listened to that guy from Occupy Wall Street. In Harrisonburg, we got one man comes down every day of the week, sits at Court Square from Occupy. Mm-hmm. He's the only one. Once in a while, there'll be a trickle of maybe two or three people come by and sit down for a few minutes. We live in the most conservative Republican area that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
I was told that I'm the only Democrat left in the whole area.
Yeah. Well, I guarantee you
it's
not.
It's a little scary, this future. And then the last thing I want to talk about that you might talk about is if Syria falls apart,
mm-hmm.
Israel then at that point can probably attack Iran. But if Syria is left intact with its bombs, what happens next?
I don't think that Syria falling apart or not falling apart will provoke an Israeli attack on Iran. I'm guessing that if the Israelis are going to do that, they've got a completely different timetable, and I frankly have no insight into what that may be. I very much hope that they don't do that. And I, you know, I hope we don't. Although Bill Kristol, you know, the guy who was agitating for a war with Iraq, is now out there agitating for a war with Iran. So the neocons are on it, and that ain't a good thing. But with regard to Syria, how Syria goes, you know, I don't think that it's going to have massive geopolitical consequences any more than Egypt and Tunisia and Libya. But I could be wrong. We'll see. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hey, check out our live free chat room over at TomHartman.com. You can drop in and hang out with some of the finest minds on earth. Back in and goes Friday, 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm looking over at DemocraticUnderground.com, and they've got their picture of the day up, and it's Mitt Romney sitting with a couple of staffers on his campaign bus. You know, he's doing his, like, cities, small cities around big cities tour, basically also known as white suburbs. And he says to the guy who's sitting next to him on the bus, he says, "My, this is a quaint mode of transportation. What is it called again?" And the fellow says, "A bus, sir. Our focus group said they'd like to see you riding in one." And Romney said, says, "So this is how regular people get to work? How marvelous." I can just, Richie Rich, right? Tim in Los Angeles. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
A lot, but I want to share this with you, Tom, because I feel that it's very important. According to the Japan Times, excuse me, 1,000 U.S. high school students starting this Sunday are going to Japan to help clean up, to do volunteer work in the tsunami zones. And the prefectures that they're going to are Iwate, Miyagi, Fukushima, and Ibaraki. And then I find out that those same four prefectures have 50,000 tons of radioactive waste at 88,000 becquerels per kilogram. In other words, those 1,000 students who are going to be there for 40 different high schools in the U.S. for 2 weeks run the risk of getting sick, cancer, or dying.
Wow, I had no idea. Somebody should be telling their parents.
Yes, and that's why I'm calling you, because I just found this out recently, and it's scaring the hell out of me.
Is there a website that you can point us to?
You know what I'll do? I'll post it, if it's okay, inside the chat room.
Yeah, okay. Just post it in the chat room. Sue will pick that up. She'll put it every night. Sue puts all of the links to every story that gets talked about into both our newsletter. We have a free newsletter that goes out every day. And also, I believe that she posts them over on our website, I believe. But certainly, if you subscribe to the Tom Hartman newsletter, which is free, and we don't sell our list or anything, yeah, you'll get it. So, Tim, thank you for the call.
One last thing, Tom.
Yeah.
Well, since someone knows me outside of the Tom Hartman show, Mike Molloy, my partner and I will be going to Japan to investigate Fukushima.
Good luck. Are you take a Geiger counter with you, Tim?
I am. We're going to take everything. We need to do. And when I get back, would you mind if I share with you guys?
Give us a shout. I mean, let us know what you learn when you get back. I can't make any commitments. The bookings have to go through Sean.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'd like to share it with you, though.
Just let us know. I'm curious. Thank you, Tim. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for participating in our chat room as well as calling into the program. In Las Vegas, Jim. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. George W. Bush is going to be here in Las Vegas next Friday, and my group, MoveOn.org, is teaming up with Occupy. George Bush is addressing the for-profit college group. And they are the ones, as you're probably aware, that are ripping the students off by promising them jobs and getting degrees.
Not just students. And they're ripping off GIs big time.
And the federal government, because most of the money is coming from student loans and Pell Grants.
And the GI Bill, yeah.
and the GI Bill. And this group is the one, this very same one of rich, right-wing, and religious fanatics that want to privatize the public school system.
Right.
So we're having a big rally next Friday at Mandalay Bay Convention Center at 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. George Bush is the keynote speaker. He's going to be addressing the group from 11:30 to 1:30. And we got a bunch of the local unions, Occupy, Move On. So we're going to have a very good big protest there.
Great. Let us know how it goes, okay?
I sure will.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jim. Great to hear from you. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Yeah, excuse me if I break out crying. I've been alternately laughing and crying since I woke up at about 1:20. When I just had the best dream I can now remember, and then heard the best call ever on your best talk show that I know of. The caller was saying that better government or a less bad government was not the answer, but that the answer was to shift our energies and support and faith to building stronger community rather than fearing a worse government. Tom, aren't you repeatedly telling us we should be ruled by fear of a worse government with those even worse boogeyman Republicans when the answer to our problem is not in the big money and centralized power of a government, but in giving going straight to working with our neighbors, helping our neighbors, and fearlessly building strong local community.
Okay. Let me answer your question, Stuart. I don't think that. There are two ways that human beings are motivated. Two ways. Only two. People are either drawn toward something, there's moving toward pleasure, or they are repelled by something, there's moving away from fear. Now, and this is Politics 101, Psychology 101, Motivation 101, but it's really important what I'm about to share with you. Moving toward pleasure, with a few exceptions, is a weak force. Right? The exceptions are if you're really hungry and you see something you want, or if you're really horny and something like that. I mean, there are a couple of exceptions, but by and large, moving toward pleasure, yes, you'll have a better life. That's a weak force. Moving away from fear, on the other hand, is one of the strong forces. It's a short force. It's brief, but it is very powerful. You know, be afraid they're going to get you. You know, the terrorists, look at what they just did on 9/11. They're going to do that to your town tomorrow. Right. And, you know, Saddam Hussein, he's got WMDs. We got to do something about it. Quick. Now, to draw an analogy, moving away from fear is like electricity, right? You get an electric shock. It's like, whoa, that was an electric shock. That's moving away from fear. Moving toward pleasure is like gravity. Gravity will always trump electricity over time. Gravity is slow and steady and faint. I mean, you're sitting around going, I hadn't even noticed gravity, right? My whole life hadn't really noticed it, but it's keeping you stuck to the earth. It's the reason why you're not floating off. So over time, it becomes the most powerful of all the forces. We have to acknowledge both. And in political arguments, you have to acknowledge both. Now, there are times when, yes, I talk about what the Republicans plan on doing to this country and what they are doing to this country. And you know, those are like electric shocks. Holy cow, look at that. They just cut unemployment benefits from 99 weeks down to 74 weeks. That's real. That's hundreds of thousands of families suddenly can't make their mortgage payments, they can't buy food, they can't buy books for their kids. That's real. But if we only hung out in that place, which is frankly where I think right-wing talk radio and Fox News pretty much hangs out exclusively in the, look out, it's the immigrants coming, it's the liberals coming, it's the, you know, fill in the blanks, right? If you only hang out in that place, you get fatigued, right? After the third or fourth or fifth electric shock, people just kind of go numb, or they die, or they give up. Marty Seligman did some brilliant research on this with dogs. And I'm opposed to vivisection you know, I would not endorse doing the research, but the results of it were fascinating. I'm not even sure that he did the research. He wrote the book about the research. He wrote two books about the research. And what they did was they had dogs, and they put them, they had these two compartments. And the two boxes, basically, and the dog could jump from one box into the other. And in one box, the dog would get an electric shock. And the dog would then jump into the other box, and he'd be fine. And then they took a second set of dogs, and they did this repeatedly, and pretty soon the dogs learned, hey, this box, I'm going to let an electric shock. They just avoided the box. Then they took a second set of dogs, and they put them in the box with the electric shock, and they basically tied them in there in a way that they couldn't get out. They couldn't get away from the shock. They got rid of the shock repeatedly, like that, over and over and over again. And after a period of a few days of experiencing this, those dogs just gave up. They just laid down and whimpered. And when they took off all the constraints, all the restraints on the dogs, and said, hey, you can move into the other box, the dogs didn't move. They just laid there and took the shocks. Now, this is a variation on the old story about baby elephants and how you train them for the circus. But, you know, this is real. And so, you know, moving away from pain is an important and useful motivation strategy. But moving toward pleasure, in my opinion, is the most important one. That is, defining a future that's going to work. Saying, you know, we want to have a world where we're looking out for everybody. We want to have a world where you're safe. Franklin Roosevelt said, in 1936, July 27, 1936, in Philadelphia, Franklin Roosevelt said, an old English judge once said, a necessitous man is not a free man. In other words, you're not free if you're hungry. You're not free if you're cold in the winter. You're not free if you're naked. If you're not free if you don't have housing. You're not free if you don't have a job. You're not free if you don't have those things. So let's create a society where we all have that core stuff so we can be free. Freedom requires a basic level, a basic social safety net. It requires, in the largest sense, a world that works for all, not just for humans, but for all forms of life. And we have it within our power to create that world between the technology, things like, you know, solar power and whatnot, the renewables, recycling, the sociology, the idea that, hey, it is possible to live without war. Human societies have done that. Let's hold that as an ideal and look at it constantly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So bottom line, occasionally, yeah, we do need to move away from pain. And let's constantly look toward a better America.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Jacob Dean and Shane Farnan. To our video director, Jim Javinsky, our phone screeners, Paul Edney and Rain Koch, to writer-researcher Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at our syndicators, Dow Global, Pacifica Radio, and Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, all the others around the country, the Don Rojas, Dennis Trunov, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to all the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Radner, Victoria Jones, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jacob and Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. It's much appreciated. Kathy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Kathy, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was listening to all your news today, Tom, and a lot of it is so discouraging. And I heard a bit of good news on Democracy Now! Today. Amy had Ralph Nader on, and he was telling about Jesse Jackson Jr. is planning on introducing a bill in the House to increase the minimum wage to $10 an hour.
Yeah, he introduced that 3 days ago, I think it was.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what the time frame was. And he also passed on two websites to look for. Timeforaraise.org tells about how to organize to push for this. And his own website is CSRL.org. And he suggested we call the economic advisor, President Obama's economic advisor at the White House to push for this, and our senators and House of Representatives.
Yeah, I am totally with you. And you know, go to callcongress.org. There's toll-free telephone numbers you can use to call Congress and tell them Jesse Jackson is spot on. Let's raise the minimum wage. It'll be an incredible stimulus for this country, and people should be able to make a decent living. Thank you very much, Kathy. Well said. I appreciate the call. Mark in Las Vegas, Nevada, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, a couple of things. First, I want to thank all of your Hispanic listeners for all the jobs that they do that the gringos don't want to do while they're smiling and being pleasant, unlike some of the gringos I know. And in the last 20 or 30 years, Mexican food and tequila have gotten a heck of a lot better in the United States. So
agreed.
I absolutely. And also, I wanted to mention that the kind of work that these people do is more important than people realize in so many ways. If you go over to France, you go to a hospital, the custodial staff is given a voice at the table because they realize that the job that they do is as important to people's health as what the doctors do in the hospital.
Yep. Well, it's also because they have about 85% unionization in France. So
absolutely. But you have to appreciate that the jobs that get the most attention aren't always the most important ones.
Yeah. I mean, you know who Martin Luther King was speaking on behalf of, the striking sanitation workers when he was shot. I mean,
And those white neighborhoods certainly wouldn't do well if two or three weeks of their trash wasn't picked up the way they produce it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is why, frankly, they shouldn't be jobs that are those jobs, you know, in quotes. I mean, it should be that you can actually make a living. This was, you know, Cesar Chavez's vision that you could actually make a living picking strawberries, that work is no less dignified than, you know, working construction or, you know, working in a steel mill or fill in the blanks, right?
Yeah. Well, so, and they actually do more good for the country than Paris Hilton ever thought of.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. Connie May in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Connie May.
Hello, it's a pleasure to speak with you, but I especially want to thank you about singing the praise of Dwight Eisenhower, because in a couple of weeks I'll be 77, and first person I voted for president was Eisenhower, and I'm from a Democratic family, so I destroyed the whole vision that they had of my continue to be voting for a Democrat.
You know, I were I voting back in 52 or 56, I probably would have voted for the Democrat. But in retrospect, Dwight Eisenhower, you know, compare him to Richard Nixon, compare him to, well, compare him to a lot of our politicians right up to this day. And he's looking pretty good. You know,
yeah, and at that time, I studied very hard because I took it very seriously that I was going to be able to vote. And what I liked about him, he talked about peace, and he was a military man.
Yes.
And I couldn't be anything better. Then later on, I think I understand that he had wanted to change the War Department to the Peace Department.
I don't know that Eisenhower ever proposed that, although it's not inconceivable. That's been Dennis Kucinich's thing for a decade and a half.
Yeah, well, I heard it before that, because I'm 77, so I've heard it for a long time.
Yeah.
You know what bothers me? I had a choice of looking at the different situations that each party projected and that they wanted, and I could make a decision. I'm really sad that young people cannot do that today.
Yeah. Well, what will get us the point where we can make those decisions is young people getting involved. And that's what they're doing with the Occupy movement. And that's what they're doing with all the young people who are showing up for everything from MoveOn.org to the local Democratic Party or whatever it may, or even the Republican Party. And so, Connie May, I am hopeful. And thank you for the call. And thanks for the perspective on Dwight Eisenhower. That's very sweet. We'll be back on Monday with Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders is going to be with us taking your calls. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Have a great weekend.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.